Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard. I am your host, Michelle Berard, founder and CEO of Urban Book Editor, LLC. I am so happy to share this hour with you, and this is an hour where we examine all those places where spirit meets life and the joys and challenges that may bring. Now, you guys already know, because you've been listening for a while, that Somewhere in the Middle is really intended to be a safe place where we can learn and grow together. And so we discuss a variety of topics, ranging from love to politics to money, business, and beyond. And that is because the human experience is so wide and varied. So I know that you guys have a lot to share with us as well. We don't want to just babble at you for the next hour. I want you to feel free to participate, to engage. I want to hear from you. So what I want you to do is get your questions and comments ready, because as we get toward the end of the show, we'll be taking calls from the audience. And I know a lot of you guys have been listening for a while, so you already know that I like to start by thanking Ms. Beverly Black and Tribe Family Channel for helping me to create this space for us. Tribe Family Channel is home to an assortment of thought-provoking shows that explore life, spirit, business, and culture, including The Woman on the Well, hosted by Ms. Beverly Black, which I had the pleasure of being on earlier this week. It was fabulous, and I thank her very much for having me on the show. I also want to give a shout-out to my last guest. I had entrepreneurs Stephen Bird and Nicole King. They are just like this fabulous couple that are designing T-shirts with positive messages, and everything they do is about uplifting themselves and others. So you can connect with Bird and Nicole at their website, tshirtoftheweek.us, and also on Instagram. If you missed that last show, make sure you get the replay. You're going to want to do that, because we had a really great discussion about maintaining balance and spiritual well-being, and we also did dabble a little bit in the politics there, you know. You can get the replay by visiting Tribe Family Channel online and checking out the show recordings. So you're going to look for the October 27th show to get that replay. I also want to give a shout-out to Bruce George of the Genius is Common movement. You guys know I love this movement. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's because it encourages all of us to embrace our inner genius and to share it with the world. The world needs your genius. And this is such an important message, not just for the youth, but for all of us, because sometimes we forget how important our individual message is, our individual gifts are. So make sure that you check out the Genius is Common movement at www.geniusiscommon.com. Now, I am super pleased. You have no idea how pleased I am to introduce tonight's guest. Founder and chief consultant of Richardson Consulting, which specializes in helping organizations gain a clear understanding of diversity, how to utilize it, how to measure its results, and how to incorporate it into the workplace. Gary has the practical knowledge in the field, which separates him from other diversity practitioners. I mean, he's got more than 16 years of experience in the field. He has been a facilitator and a program manager for senior leader external training for the Department of Defense. He holds a BS in criminal justice from Empire State College in New York and a master's degree in military arts and science from Air Command and Staff College at Maxwell Air Force Base. And he is soon to be our newest member of the Trad Family Channel, and he's going to be hosting Diversity Works on Trad Family Channel. So that's really exciting for us and hopefully for him too. Gary has also received several awards, including, I mean, this is just like a crazy list of stuff, right? He's including the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award, the 2017 Blacks in Government Award, Meritorious Service Award, the Equal Opportunity Director of the Year in 2009, the Commandant's Award, the Distinguished Graduate Award, and the Citizen Soldiers Award. My goodness, could you be any more distinguished? So, Gary, that's like a mouthful. I want to welcome Gary Richardson to the show. Thank you so much, Gary, for coming on Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Barad.
Hey, well, thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate it. I just landed up getting off my spaceship, me and Star Child. You know, we out here playing love crime right now, dropping some diversity up in outer space on them. So I am so happy to be here right now. We're going to have some fun. I just love doing what I'm doing, and I'm honored to be here once again, and thank Bev Black for making that connection between you and I. And this is exciting for me, and I am so excited that I am going to be joining the Tribe family to kick off my own radio show, Diversity Works, coming November 28th at 8 p.m. So I'm excited right now, Michelle. I'm really excited.
Very cool. I'm excited, too. And what I really am excited to have you on the show for is because in today's political climate, there seems to be an assault on the concept of diversity.
Yes.
And it's almost like diversity has become a dirty word. You know, and you have made it part of your life's work to help leaders understand the importance and the value of inclusiveness and how that benefits their entire organizations. You know, so that's, I think it's even more important now. But before we get to all of that, I like to start an interview with two questions. And the reason I start with these two questions is because I believe they lead right into what you're doing and why.
Okay.
And so I'm gonna just pause for a second because I can see the phone lines are lighting up, and I really appreciate you guys getting on the call, listening in. I think we're going to have a great discussion with Gary Richardson, my guest tonight. I just want you to know that I know you're there, and we are going to open the phone lines for questions and comments toward the end of the show, so please stick with us. I think Gary's got lots of great stuff to share with us. So, Gary.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to ask you my two questions.
All right.
Gary Richardson, who are you, and how did you become who you are today?
All right. Well, the name spells it out, Gary Richardson. I am a 50 years young, chocolate, African-American male that was born and raised in a little town called Painesville, Ohio, right on the shores of Lake Erie. And I grew up in an environment that I was lucky to have had the experience of growing up in. I was in a very diverse city when I grew up. back in the 60s, 1967. So I was born right at the cusp of the Civil Rights Movement and the Martin Luther King marches. I was born, you know, just after Martin Luther King had been assassinated for trying to gain the rights for equality for African Americans and other minorities within this country. So I was born during a turbulent time, so I came out with a turbulent heart. And my family was from the South, born and raised in Arkansas, so we were kids that lived in the inner city. But let me tell you something. I've done everything a child on the farm has done. I've made sausage. We've had those whole half of hogs brought and had to break it down, create those ribs and sausages and pork chops, all that kind of stuff. I was the only kid in the city doing that, and I used to hate it during that period of time, but it gave me an experience that my parents went through, so I had a little bit of that history that was passed on to me through them. Hardworking family. Father owned his own business pretty much all my life. He had a gas station when I was a little child, maybe 2 to 3 years old, and then after that, he developed another business, auto body mechanic shop that he had for a number of years, over 40 years. So I have that entrepreneurial spirit that was passed down through my father through me. Went to college back in 85, so I'm telling my age. Graduated from Thomas W. Harvey High School. For anybody out there from the Ville listening right now, you know how we do it, Red Raiders. Went to Youngstown State, played a little football there. Coach Jim Trussell was my coach when I was playing back then. And figured out that, you know, with my height and everything, I was good, but God didn't give me a whole lot of height. So them big brothers out there, you know, chasing me down 300 pounds, and they can keep up with me. So I figured God wanted me to do something else. So played a little ball, went into the Air Force, and that's when things started to take off for me in becoming the man that I am right now, both professionally and on a personal level. So I left college and went into the Air Force. So I kind of did things a little backwards. So I went into the Air Force back in 1988, stayed in the Air Force for almost 5 years and vowed that I would never, ever go back into the military again. During that period of time, I was still foolish enough. I didn't have enough sense to leave all the uniforms alone. So then I became a New York State trooper. Back in 1992, and was a trooper for 20 years. And at the same time that I did that, something kept telling me, hey, don't lose sight of your military career. You're going to need it somewhere down the line. So I jumped back into the Air National Guard up in Syracuse, New York, 174th Fighter Wing, right there on Malloy Road, for those of you from New York listening on the line right now. Stayed up there for 20 years, and I don't know if you've been to upstate New York, Michelle, but we got two seasons, cold and colder.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And after shoveling that snow 2 or 3 times a night, coming home working those night shifts, they called me up in 2013 and say, hey, listen, we got a job down here in Cocoa Beach, Florida. And I said, yes. I didn't even know what the job was. I just said, yes, stick to Florida. So I came on down, found out that it was a service liaison job for the Air National Guard, and then became the program manager for senior leader training. And that really kind of, I would say, tied the shoestrings up for me in my career, because during all of this stuff that I'm telling you, I actually got into the field of equal opportunity. During all of this okay. military and state police, all that kind of stuff. And then that led to me becoming a diversity expert, because I was sent to a school to become a certified diversity practitioner for the Guard. And that's kind of how I got into the business that I'm in right now. So
wow.
Yeah, mouthful. And that's just the beginning. That's not even doing the work. That was just getting me started into this field. And I kind of got started in this field of work because I couldn't keep my mouth shut. So I'll tell you a quick story. We're in class, and it's a human relations class. So in the military, each person has to take, at the time, 4 hours of human relations education for, you know, throughout your period of time in the military. So I go to my first human relations class. I'm the only African-American dark person in the class. Only thing that was darker than me was the leather seat sitting at the table. So I'm sitting in there with about 20 other people, and in walks this 6'7" white guy. So I had never seen a white guy that tall in the military, so that was kind of funny. But I'm still waiting on a black, Hispanic, something with color, anything, a poodle, anything with color to walk through. Nothing. So I'm still waiting. He didn't start the class. It's 10 minutes into the class. I'm still waiting for somebody to walk through the door that looks like me, and it never happened. So I'm sitting there listening to him, and I have to tell you, this guy, his name was Major Brady. Never forget him, because he and I have a very close relationship even to this day. But he's going on, and he's doing his thing, and, I mean, he's putting in work. I mean, he's really got my attention, except for I couldn't wait to ask him this one question. That's a $64,000 question. And once he got finished, he says, "Anybody have any questions?" So my hand shot up. I said, "Yeah. How come you don't have no black or Hispanic people on your staff?" And he just looked at me. Yeah, yeah. See, it wasn't going down real good that day. But I couldn't keep my mouth closed. I had to ask him that. So he didn't stutter. He didn't stutter. He didn't turn red. He just turned and looked at me and smiled and said, "You know what? Why don't you stay after class? I need to talk to you about that." Now, listen, Michelle, you've never been in the military, right? I'm assuming.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
So let me tell you something about the military. When you are, I was an enlisted member. So anybody that's in the military, you understand where I'm going with this. I was enlisted, and Mr. 6'7", Major Brady, was an officer. So normally, anytime an officer tells you as an enlisted member to wait after class because they want to talk to you about something, you know you're about to get jacked up. So I thought my career was going to be ending because maybe I said the wrong thing. And that conversation that we had afterwards was short and to the point. He says, "Gary, what squadron are you in?" Squadron meaning where did I work? I said, "I'm in civil engineering, sir." He says, "You're in the wrong squadron. You need to be over here with me." And that conversation is what got me into diversity some 17, 18 years ago.
Wow.
That's how I landed here.
Wow. That's amazing. So was that because you said his name was Major Brady, I believe? Major Brady?
Yes. Major Mark Brady, yes.
So Major Brady had this as a personal mission, or was it because it was something that he was tasked with as a military officer?
It just, if you're talking about the class, that was part of his responsibility being in his position. So he was the director of what was called social actions at the time, which then went from social action to military equal opportunity officer office, I'm sorry, into the equal opportunity office. So it derived from affirmative action, and he was the director for that particular office. So that was part of his role, was to teach those classes, and I just so happened to be in his class that day.
Well, now that's curious to me because, you know, I think I mentioned to you, you know, urban book editor. I edit manuscripts, and one of my clients writes books about his time as a military brat, moving around with his dad. And the military, the armed forces were desegregated at the time, but it was during segregation. So he often if there were no schools on the base, for example, he often would have to go to a segregated school if he were in an area that practiced segregation.
Right, right.
And so you kind of got the sense that the armed forces were far advanced in some ways.
Yes.
But that there were still a lot of issues. And he talks about some of those issues, particularly when the civil rights movement started and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that, because there was
yeah.
a lot of conflict. You know, his dad was actually stationed in Germany at the time
yeah.
that a lot of that was going on. And a lot of the conflict that was going on between military personnel, among military personnel. So how did the military say, well, we need to focus on diversity in particular? How did that come about when they were already, I would say, in some ways, far advanced of the society?
Wow. Yeah.
As a whole.
Yes. Well, let me tell you, I mean, that is a great segue into the institute that I actually work at now. Right now, where I work, is called the Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute. That's here at Cocoa Beach, located on Patrick Air Force Base. Now,
mm-hmm.
that institute, or this institute that I'm referring to, was originally called the Race Relations Institute. And it was created because of all of the racial tensions and race riots that were occurring, not just here in America, but also in the United States military.
Mm-hmm.
There were several riots on bases. In fact, during the Vietnam War, there was actually a warship that had to return back to port because of a race riot on board the ship. So it was so bad that there was a General Theus, who was an Air Force general. He was tasked with finding out how the military could start dealing with some of these racial tensions that we were having within the Department of Defense. And
mm-hmm.
he created a report that now still is at the Institute that is pretty lengthy about his findings on race and discrimination within the military. And that report is what generated, it was the catalyst for creating this institute that I work at right now. So, yes, we were way ahead somewhat, but it was because of what was going on in society. We weren't immune to it either. So that's really how this institute got started.
So as a military person,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, I honestly, I can't think of anybody directly in my family after my grandfather who served, maybe an uncle who served. So I don't come from a military family. I don't come from a military background. So bear with me if I don't speak to this well. But
it's all right. I got you covered. Don't worry about it.
Well, here's what I observed. You know, my son got involved with the Civil Air Patrol, which is, the auxiliary, an auxiliary to the Air Force,
yeah.
cadet unit. And I saw all these kids from all these different backgrounds, this was in Atlanta, coming together and really, I mean, I thought they were fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were Asian kids, there were Hispanic kids, black kids, white kids. You know, it was great. And I saw them working together, and I loved the leadership skills and everything I saw my son getting,
mm-hmm.
but there were still tensions even in that cadet
yeah.
unit in
yes.
2017.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was really, it was disappointing, although not entirely unexpected, right?
Yeah.
So given all that and given the military setup, you know, with orders and commands and, you know, chains of command and all of that, how does a diversity program work in a military setting? I mean, what does that look like?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. So let me say this before I answer that question directly. I don't know if a few weeks ago, if you had the opportunity to see what happened at the Air Force Academy, where I guess there were three cadets that were at the Air Force Academy, and
mm-hmm.
someone had mm-hmm. written derogatory remarks on a dry erase board on their door using the
mm-hmm.
N-word. Right. And the superintendent, who is a three-star general, so for anybody who's in the military, once you get a star, I mean, you're already up in the sky, but you get three, and you're that person that can say yes and no and make it happen, okay?
Right.
So their superintendent is a three-star general. That three-star general shut it down. He has a video on YouTube, and if anybody is listening, if you have not seen this video, it's a must-see. I have never in my life seen a leader face discrimination and racism the way he did it on that day. He shut it down. He said, listen, nope, stop everything. We ain't having no classes. We ain't playing no kickball. We ain't doing none of that stuff. Everybody in the auditorium, let's go. And he went to the podium, and I swear, when he got finished, I was jumping up out of my seat by the things he said and how he went directly at racism and discrimination. I was jumping up, Michelle, saying, sign me up.
Yeah.
I got bad knees and everything. They about to put me out and retire next year. I can't sign up again. But I'm going to tell you what the streets say about something like that. On that day, that general did more for recruiting a diverse group of people than any marketing tool, any commercial that the Air Force or any other military installation could have put together by the way he faced it. And he said, listen, if you don't like having a diverse population, now, this is not exactly what he said, but I'm getting happy some kind of way right now. He said, but if you can't get down with it like this, you can get out.
Yeah.
Then, Michelle, he hit him. I thought he must have been hanging with 50 Cent or one of them because he came hard. He was like, listen, take your cell phones out. Take them out. Go ahead and record it. Put it up on YouTube because I want everybody to know.
Wow.
So when I saw that, for me, seeing a leader do that, and let's go a little bit further. With all of this tension that we have right now, in our society, in our country, with all of this political stuff and racism and all that, who's been or who have been the staples of some sort of calm? It's been the military officers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When the policies came out to, take away the transgender, right to be in the military, It was the leadership in the military who stood up and said, hey, listen, we don't do anything until A, B, C, or D happens. When the racial stuff came out, it was the leaders of those military branches who stood up and said, listen, we don't get down like that. This is not what we're about. That's leadership.
Yeah.
That is why I, every day, get up and do the work that I do for the Department of Defense, because I do believe in it. And when you ask what it looks like, this is what it looks like. We are kind of spoiled within the Department of Defense in the military because we are forced to work alongside people who are different from us. We don't have a choice because we don't pick and choose who comes through those doors. It's whoever makes it. So these folks have gone all over the world and worked in different countries with people from different ethnicities, and you name it. So every time we go, we bring something back. So for us, performance is never a luxury. It is never a luxury. So you cannot worry about what that person next to you looks like. You have to worry about how they're going to perform. So for me, because I am charged with teaching this diversity for our senior leaders here at the Institute, diversity is way beyond demographics. In fact, this is a great spot for me to tell you about my book that will be dropping next week called Beyond Demographics, The Truth About Diversity. And it's more of a memoir as to how diversity works, how I've come to learn what its true meaning is, through those experiences of being a military officer and also a commissioned officer with the state police. So for us, it's all about making it a practical application. So when we go in to teach, or when I go in to teach, I'm not talking about ethnic groups, gender, all that kind of stuff. We already have that.
Mm-hmm.
But I talk about how do we take this thing to the next level? How do we apply diversity within the workplace? How do we make it functional? And this is how you do it. First, you have to understand that there is an equation, and that equation is representation plus inclusion plus performance equals diversity. Anything less, and you're just diverse. And there's a big difference between having a diverse group and having diversity. You can be diverse, but you can't be diversity. You have to have it. That's my job. That's what I do for our national security. So when you all are asleep at night,
mm-hmm.
we are the ones that protect you and keep the monsters and all that stuff from crawling out underneath the beds and all of that. That's my job, to teach leaders how to leverage diversity, okay, how to leverage diversity to get the best out of each individual within the armed forces. That's what it looks like for us. It's practical. It's not just talking about a state of being, so that if we get a comfortable number of minorities, then somehow we think we've created diversity. No, you haven't. You just got a group of people in a room. That's all you have. Can they work together? Can they do the task properly? It's like American Idol. You may be able to sing, but can you sing tonight when it counts? That's what we worry about. And that's what it looks like for us.
Okay, so you said a bunch of stuff that really just makes so much sense, but there's some terms I would like you to kind of get at a little in what I'm going to call normal speak, right?
Yes.
Because we get into our fields and we tend to use these different terms, and they end up sounding a little jargony, and I end up worrying, like, wow, does everybody get what that means? What do you mean by leveraging diversity?
Right. That's what I'm talking about. Now you're asking real questions, because that's what I have my participants do. I want them to ask so I can clarify, so they can see it in their mind. So when I say leverage for me is learning how to take advantage of a person's skill sets and tap into their abilities to get them to perform the way I need them to. So if I know that you, Michelle, have a special skill that, let's say, the Air Force didn't train you to have, but you just incorporated it somewhere in college or somewhere on the streets. As a leader, I want to know what those skills are, so that now when I need somebody to fill that position, when I need a critical decision made, that it takes a lot of different ideas, I'm going to be looking to pull Michelle in and say, hey, what you got for us? Where's your experience? Have you ever seen anything like this before?
Mm.
You understand
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? So
yep.
that's what I'm
yep.
talking about. When I say leverage, it's not simply pulling you in because, oh, Michelle, you happen to be an African-American woman, and I don't know if you are or not. I'm just saying for the sake of conversation, African-American woman, I need you to come in and fill this position. For what? So you can sit around and be black all day? You could do that at home. I don't know about you, but my skin color has never performed a task in my life. If it could, trust me, Michelle, I'll have my blackness on this phone talking to you, and the rest of me will be down in Vegas kicking it with my son right now. And I'll call blackness and be like, listen, when Star Child and the spaceship comes back, y'all be out here on the corner at 8 o'clock underneath the spotlight. You know how we do it. In before the lights come on. All right.
There you go.
So,
okay.
That's what leverage means to me.
Okay, I'm going to push back on that a little bit then.
Yes.
So what about the concept that people of different backgrounds
mm-hmm.
who may not have the exact skill set that you need
uh-huh.
at that moment or
yep.
something, a particular skill set, can bring a different perspective to problem solving.
Yes.
Right? And to
yes.
challenges that you run into, and you can teach them the skills.
Oh, look, that may be true. And for the military, that is true. Because, like I said, unless you are a recruiter, you don't get to pick and choose who you work with. So for me, when people come into my team or on my team, I got to take what's there. I don't get a chance to say, no, listen, I'm going to have my own lottery. I'm going to pick me a first rounder and a second rounder. So I have to deal with whoever it is, whether it's a female, whether it's somebody from a different country, whether it's somebody with a different accent. I have to deal with that person. Now, as a leader, it's up to me to find out what that person's skill sets are. I have to set an environment where that person feels comfortable, no matter where they came from, to show me what they can do. So I have to do a lot of me work before I go into work. I have to know my mannerisms. I have to know my pet peeves. I have to know little things that make me upset, because those folks don't work for me. They work for the United States military. I am discharged with being in charge of them and guiding them along the way. I don't sign their paychecks. Somebody else does. So I'm there to get to those skill sets that you're talking about, and I don't care what they look like. Doesn't matter to me.
So how do you do that me work?
Oh, the me work starts way, way before you even get to a position. So I'll put it to you this way. Whenever when I was building my business, because I have a consulting business right now, I prepped. Prep means prepare. I read. I did my research. I listened to other speakers. I found out what diversity was and what it was not before I ever opened my doors. So for eight years, I did everything building up to becoming a consultant for free, because I didn't want to have a business and start learning when I open my doors. When you open the doors to come to me, I'm finishing the job. I'm not starting it. So my preparation starts from day one. The minute I get a vision in my mind of where I want to go, that's when my preparation starts. I start learning about self. What gets me upset? What makes me happy? What's my work ethic? And here's one for you, Michelle, that a lot of people don't look at. How do other people really see me? Not what I want them to see, not what I'm hoping they see, but what do they really see when they see me as their leader? Do they see a person that they want to follow? Do they see a person that they trust? Do they see a person who really cares about their well-being? Because like they say, nobody don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Right.
Once they know that, I don't have to work so hard now. Because those folks, most of them, they arrive before I do. When I come in to speak, whenever we have a class, those folks who work for me, and I'm going to give them a shout out right now because I love them to death, Nellie Wakefield and Terry Spain, those two people who are on my team, Michelle, I don't have to do nothing but walk in and be ready to speak. These people go down there, they prep the classroom, they get all the materials together, they take care of the schedule, the roster, getting the students in, and these people are coming from all over the world. I don't have to do any of that because those folks know that's their job, they know how to do it, but they know that I trust them and they know that I care. They make it easy for me.
Well, then, let me ask you another question, because you mentioned something kind of interesting. You said that part of that me work, and I'm presuming this is assignments that you give to your leaders that you work with as well, is figuring out or finding out how other people see you, or in this their case, see them. Right. How do people do that? How, if you were to give a short tutorial to the callers right now, to the folks on the listening to the show right now, what's a quick way that they can start to make that assessment of how other people see them versus how they are trying to project themselves to the world?
Ask them. ask them. And ask, ask them, ask them what they think of you. Now, there's ways of doing it. I mean, to just walk up to someone, hey, how do you think about me? I mean, that's going to be a little awkward, right?
Mm-hmm,
but there's ways
mm-hmm.
of checking on that. You can simply ask someone, is there anything that you need from me? All right? Is there anything that I'm not doing that you need me to do? And asking those questions, something mysterious happens when you ask a person that. If they're comfortable with you, they will tell you your shortcomings in a nice way. Well, sir, you know, there's some times when, you know, I may call you and I may not get an answer right away. Or sometimes, you know, if I ask you something, I know you're busy, but you're a little rushed, you know, and it seems like you got something on your mind. Now, for me, the cue is to first, I need to put my little feelings on the shelf, all right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm too sensitive, there ain't no need of me asking them because I already know I'm going to get mad, so there's no need in asking them. But
mm-hmm.
if I'm sincere and I want to be the best, I ask them. They will start to tell me, and then as long as you keep quiet, they will start to branch off into your personality.
Mm.
They really will. Every time I've done it, it has happened. Now, the key, Michelle, though, you have to build an environment where when you ask somebody that, they feel comfortable enough to be honest with you. If they're not, oh, no, everything is good. Come on now. You can't be good with everybody all the time. I don't even like myself on some days, so I know I can get on their nerve. So you can't give me that. All right? So if you build that environment where people are comfortable enough around you, they'll tell you. But even better is when they can come up to you, even when you're not asking, hey, sir, need to talk to you for a second. And I can tell when they voice change on me, when it gets real smooth,
mm-hmm.
like yours just did right there when you said that. See, if you did that to get your work for me, uh-oh, Michelle getting ready to break me off with something. I know she got
Oh, no.
So when they say that to me and they come to me and they tell me, hey, sir, how do you think you did today? Just a question like that lets me know that I was off. I was off today.
Because
they wouldn't ask me that if I was on. They would tell me, sir,
right.
You were on fire today, you know. But if they ask me, how do you think you did today? I already know, okay. And I don't even need to go any further. I already know. But you got to build that environment first. You got to have people comfortable around you and that they will trust you enough to be honest. That works for me.
Well, that sounds like it's transferable to just about any kind of situation, whether it's family, friends,
yes.
workplace, clubs,
yes.
whatever.
Yes, absolutely it is. It certainly is. And if you can somehow manage your emotions, because I'll be honest with you, and I can admit this, at this stage of the game and at this stage of my life, even when people exaggerate about you, let's say, for instance, you meet a Decepticon. Now, I don't know if you ever watched the Autobots, all right?
Yep.
You know, in the Autobots, there's you got the Transformers, and then
yep.
you got the good ones are the Autobots, and then the ones that they look like they're cool with you, but they're really not, those are the Decepticons, okay? So you got to know which one is which. Because they look the same, but as soon as you hit them with something that they don't like, maybe something that you're doing that's good, you'll see them start to transform into something that you didn't know they were. All right, so that's just a little note for you all that's listening out there. If y'all got some people y'all think you're close to, just go to them and tell them something that you're about to do. Just anything. Oh, I'm about to write a book. Oh, I'm about to get a degree. And if they start transforming and their bumper is a little loose, Decepticon.
Uh-uh.
Decepticon. Leave them alone. Leave them alone. They always on the lookout for the Decepticons because they can fool you.
That is hilarious. That's hilarious. I'm sorry. It's hilarious because I would never have thought about that, but you are absolutely correct about Decepticons.
Hey. When you're a police officer and you're in the military, you got to think that way, Michelle. That's the only way you make it home at night. All right? Some people, they, you know, their smiles are just a little crooked, a little upside down.
Yep.
You know, they don't mean you well. But you need those people because they help you grow. They help
gotcha,
you grow.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, but then there's the argument, and I'm going to take this maybe a slightly different direction than you're thinking of it, but there is an argument, though, that those Decepticons undermine you, whether it's by undermining your self-confidence. For example, why do you want to go get a master's degree?
Why not?
What makes you think you can write a book? Right? All of those things. So you also have to look out for those folks from that perspective, right? Not just, they can maybe, you know, ask you some questions that might be helpful if you pay attention and check your emotions, but they can also undermine you, and sometimes that's what they're trying to do, whether consciously or subconsciously, right?
You know, okay, Michelle, now, if we were playing tennis right now, it's 15 love, so you just served it back to me, and you got a score, but I'm getting ready to come back like Venus Williams on you, and I'm a third back.
Wait,
okay, I'm a volley.
I want to hear what you just said because it just cut out for a second. So you said 15 love, and then we lost
okay,
some sound for a second.
So we playing tennis, 15 love. You're up right now, but I'm getting ready to serve it back to you like Serena and Venus put together. Okay, I'm getting ready to bring this one back over the net. See, they can't though. The only person that can stop you from doing you is you. Listen, I'm honest, I'm serious about this, all right? In some of my lectures, I even end my lectures this way. Your friends and your family and your loved ones, those folks are your cheerleaders. They are there to keep pushing you to wipe the sweat from your brow when you're on your grind. But they're not the ones that you should be really thankful for. It's your haters, those Decepticons. They're the ones that make you stay up late at night. They make you run the extra mile. They make you grind a little more. Let me tell you, I done been hated on so much, Michelle, I don't have to buy red bottom shoes. All my shoes stay red on the bottom because I'm telling you, they don't. They will break you if you're weak. If you're strong, they only feed you. They give you that push that you need. Because I'll be honest with you, there's been the book, for instance. There, Michelle, I done quit on that book so many times, we need to both go to divorce therapy. I done quit that book so many times, I done broke up with it, done cussed it out, done divorced it, done put sanctions, embargoes, no wheat, no oil, no nothing. And I kept going back, kept going back. Kept going back, kept going back. When you do that, nobody can break you except for yourself. If you give up and you throw it in because what somebody else is doing, you're really falling into what they're trying to do to you. It may seem
right.
As though people can stop you, but people can only stop you from doing something you weren't supposed to do in the first place. I wholeheartedly believe that. Sometimes they do you a favor by stopping you from doing something.
Right.
But when it's your thing, and when I say it's your thing, I call it the trilogy or the trinity. For those of you who were listening last week, I'm going to explain it to you again. See, the trinity or trilogy is this. If you have a passion for that thing that you do, a passion that's so strong that you don't care what else is going on in life, it's just you and that thing, and you'll do it for free because you don't feel like you're working because you love it that much. But then you have to have the talent to match up with that passion. I go back to American Idol again. I only watch that show the first couple weeks because I like to see those mama singers up there, to see the mama singers, those singers that only their mama told them they can sing. But they really and they get up there and they singing their little hearts out. And they know they're not going to make it. Their mama know they're not going to make it. But they just want to put them up there anyway to make them fulfill that childhood dream. That's not talent. They just want to do something. I'm talking about straight up raw talent that you were given, that you harvested, that you dedicated yourself to your craft. But last but not least, the most important thing you need is a higher power. And for me, that's God. If God signs off and co-signs that thing that you were doing, those Decepticons, like every other car, they rust. They fall apart. They break down. They're out of season. There's a new model coming along. You're going to have new problems coming along, just like Decepticons. They change over time, but they can't break you. Because that
right.
Trinity or trilogy is working for you. It's creating that synergy around you, and anything that you need, anything that you want that pertains to that craft is going to come into that center of that circle. If you got
yeah.
that, you can't be broken.
Well, I agree with you on the trilogy or your trinity, as you called it. I think I take a slightly different approach, though, to the Decepticons.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to hold that thought, though, because we do have some callers that might want to talk to you.
Right.
So let's see if we've got, yeah, I know we've gone a little bit longer than I normally do for callers. Caller at area code 479-479. Are you there, caller?
Do they know they need to be unmuted? Tell them to jump up and grab ass for bed.
Yeah. Hey, if you're having
Hello?
Trouble getting unmuted, okay, area code 479, are you there?
This is area code 479. I apologize, I was on mute.
Oh, you have a question for our guest, Gary Richardson?
So I don't necessarily have a question, more just a comment. First of all, I like the content of the message, Mr. Richardson.
Thank
and,
you, sir.
I want to say that thanks for defining the word Decepticon. I am not a Decepticon, and I want you to continue to go forth, stay married to the passion of the book, get the book out there, and continue doing what you're doing, because leaders out there today in corporate, military, associations need to understand the true definition of diversity and
Thank
inclusion
you.
And what it is. It's just not about the skin color and working together and saying we are diverse. I really appreciate it. So keep it up, good brother. And I'm going to sign off with area code 479. Is also last name Raleigh. Thanks for sending the link, and keep it up, brother.
Hey, I appreciate you. And listen, bro, I'm going to be looking for 479 on November 28th at 8 p.m. Me and Starchild going to be back on the Tri-Channel Network. We're going to be doing our thing straight for Planet Love Tron. And listen, be on early, because if you a Parliament kid like I was, that's what you going to hear. So I appreciate the call, man, really. Appreciate it.
Thank you, caller. And I was going to say, with all of these Parliament and Funkadelic references, I'm just saying, I better hear some Parliament and Funkadelic when I listen into your show.
Michelle, listen, I'm telling you right now, you should have been started right now listening to it. You know their album. You know one record is like 2 days long.
I know, right? When I torture my children by making them listen to music from back then, they're like, my goodness, how long is the song? I'm like, it's not these little baby songs y'all got now. We would be in there dancing.
That's right. Them bands back then had 50 people in there. They could
yep.
run a first string and a second string and keep playing.
Yep.
Thank you, Carla.
Awesome.
I appreciate it, though, really. I'm going to keep doing my thing for you all.
Wow, that was awesome. Well, and I'm going to tell you now what was my thing with the Decepticon. I love that concept. I believe that you can love people from a distance.
Oh, yeah.
And if those people who are, you know, because sometimes your haters are family.
Yeah. Oh.
Sometimes they are friends. They don't mean to be haters.
No.
I think a lot of times people operate from a place of fear.
Yes.
And their fear is then projected onto you.
Oh my.
And you know, so I look at this from a particular perspective. I'm like, I can love you. We can, you know, we cool. I have no problem with you. But I cannot be around you because I'm trying to do some things.
Hey.
And
hey.
I got to keep stepping. And if I'm listening to you yin-yanging in my ear, that's going to slow my flow. Not stop me, but it can slow my flow. So I got to keep stepping.
See, now, Michelle, you made me bring out my Bootsy star glasses because I need to see what you were saying. I got them. I'm in here having church by myself, y'all. Swear, you should have never let me get on the air. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, if my father was listening right now, he used to say to me, son, whenever you're trying to do something, you need to cut everybody off. And I'm like, man, that's kind of gangster, man. You know I got to have friends. I'm a little kid. I can't just go around by myself. That ain't what I'm saying. He said, when you're trying to do something, you have to cut everybody off, and sometimes you got to cut your family off.
Yep.
I'm like, what? I couldn't fathom that concept until
mm-hmm.
I got old enough to enter into this institution called work.
Yep.
And let me tell you, when you start telling people, matter of fact, I don't even tell people that I'm retired anymore. I'm telling you all on the radio that. I'm telling you, I don't even tell them that. I used to tell people, yeah, I retired. And you talking about stink face?
Oh, yeah.
They would look at me like I stole something from them. I'm like, listen, I'm telling you I quit work. I'm not telling you I'm coming to take your work. I quit. I'm done. No. No. That was like, I told my wife, I said, you know what? I'm going to stop telling people I'm retired. Because now look. Right now, things are hard for people out there. So I started thinking about it. I said, you know what? I can understand why. If you out there grinding every day and you can't make ends meet and you struggling trying to pay that next bill, trying to keep your lights on, now here I come with my little red bottoms on from heating up grinding, telling you that I done retired, you going to feel some kind of way about that. So I stopped saying it. I only say it in certain circles. So if there's any callers right now, if you mad at me for saying that, I apologize, but it's for a conversation. Just put the radio on mute for a second, or pull it away from your ear, and now you come on back, because I'm not going to say it no more.
Right, right. But it's true. It's unfortunate, but I have lived it. I'm divorced. I went through a fairly challenging divorce. I'm going to put it mildly. And, you know, a lot of times when you go through that, you go through a lot of financial upheaval. And in the course of that divorce, I lost my part of our business. And so I had to basically start from zero.
Yeah.
And so I was out there applying for jobs, wasn't getting any hits on my resume. I'm like, man, I have done everything, including running companies. What are you talking about? I can't qualify for your job as an assistant. Are you kidding me? Come on.
Yeah.
And so I had to dumb down my resume, said I would look like no more than an office manager at the most. I had to, I really hit it hard with just the applying to all these really low-level jobs. But the most important thing I had to do, I actually cut off all contact with anybody except my kids because, well, I had to take care of them, right?
Right.
I was required by law.
That's right.
I know. I know. I was like, man, this is too much. But I had to cut all that energy, not because everybody that I was dealing with was, you know, not positive energy or anything like that, but because what it really let me do was consolidate my energy and focus in a really direct and targeted manner. And I was stronger when my energy was less spread out and less, you know, less spread amongst other people. And that's really what I ended up having to do. So I have lived it. I think your dad is a very wise man. And yeah. I wish somebody had told me that sooner.
Hey.
I wish somebody had told me I didn't have to figure it out on my own.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's good to have people that have gone through it. My dad went through some stuff. That's why he was able to tell me that
yeah.
and hand it down to me. So, listen, this is what you do, Michelle. And for any of the listeners out there, when you get into the point where somebody getting in your nerves, I want you all to go to YouTube and just listen to O2 Genius' song. Cut it. Just play that a couple times. Gotta remind you to cut them Decepticons off. And you'll find out that when you go to get weighed, you're about 100 pounds lighter than you think you are. You've just been carrying a whole
yes.
bunch of cats on your back. Get them off.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
okay,
indeed.
So,
yeah,
hey,
that is of vital importance.
That it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to keep positive energy around you. I had to tell you this real quick. I arrested this guy one time when I was a trooper, right? And
mm-hmm.
young brother. And he says, hey, you know, trooper, he says, you know what I was told? I said, what? He said, man, you hang around with two broke people, you're going to be the third broke one. But if you hang around with a billionaire, you'll be. And I'm thinking, why are you do realize you have cuffs on telling me this right now? You must not have practiced that. Or are you just here to save me?
Wow.
Yeah, he sure did. He told me that, and it stuck with me for the longest. So anybody can give you a nugget of education
yep.
if you're willing to listen. Anybody.
Pearls of wisdom.
That's right. That's
okay,
right.
From an unlikely place.
That's right. But I'll take it. Anybody, I'll tell you right now, if you spend longer than 5 minutes with me, you better check your pockets because I done jacked you for something. I give you credit
That's
for it.
It.
But I done took one of your ideas, and I didn't use it. But I will give you credit if I can remember your name. So don't worry about it. I'm going to elevate you, but I'm going to take something from you. I try to take something from every relationship
yes.
that I come across. And with that being said, I just want to let all the listeners know, Michelle, that my next stop on this tour, on this radio tour, I'm going to be on the Financial Intelligence Show with Mr. Steve Hutchinson November 20th at 2 p.m.
Yes.
Pacific time and 5 p.m. Eastern time. Folks, we're going to be talking about some finances, some dinero, money, how you make it, how you keep it, how you spend it. That's what we're going to be talking
awesome.
About. So I know you're going to be there too, right?
Yes. Well, and you know what? That's actually what I was about to say. We're coming up to the top of the hour, and so we're going to be wrapping up. And I was going to ask you, what else do you have going on? I know you've got your book coming out.
Yes.
Tell us again about the book so that we know where we can get it.
All right, folks. Next week, you all are going to be able to go to Amazon.com, and I want you all to look for Beyond Demographics, The Truth About Diversity. It's a real hot cover, put a lot of time into it, and it's a memoir about diversity. It is not this technically written how-to guide where I'm walking you through the steps to get there. I'm telling you real-life situations from when I was a state trooper working 9/11 and then going over to New Orleans to work with those folks out there during Katrina and all that kind of stuff and how that enlightened me as to what diversity is truly all about. So that's coming out next week. I'm actually leaving tomorrow. I'm going to be out there to see my folks in Topeka, Kansas, to do a presentation on diversity for some folks out there. Monday morning, I'm going to hit their Chamber of Commerce, fly on back home, and then November 9th, I'm going to be at Disney here in Orlando, Florida. I'm their keynote speaker for their Veterans Day parade. They get to ride. They're going to ride me around on a Corvette on the back so I can
Ooh.
Wave. Hey, Michelle, they tricked me, though. I thought they said they were giving me a Corvette. So I apologized. I said, yeah, I'll do it. I'm with it. And then they said, no, you're riding on a Corvette. I couldn't get out of it. Yeah. I said, all right. Y'all got me on this one. But it's all good. And it's bittersweet because my time is coming up. I'm retiring next March, taking this
wow.
uniform off and hanging it up for the last time. This will be my second retirement. I'm like Michael Jordan. I ain't coming back out of retirement, though, after this one. I'm hanging it up, and I'm going to do my business. You all go out to www.richardson.com. RichardsonConsulting.net. That's all one word, RichardsonConsulting.net. Hit me up on my website. You can send me a message through there. My video, I have a video if you all want to see a presentation that I've done. Just go to YouTube, Google Gary Richardson, Wounded Warrior, and you'll see a keynote presentation that I did for my folks from the Wounded Warrior program. They invite me as their keynote speaker each year. I was out in Tampa. You get a chance to see me do a keynote. So I got a lot of stuff coming up, radio show coming up, and a few more speaking engagements. So in the meantime,
and if,
I'm going
to
breathe.
And let me just ask you a question. And if someone wants you to be a speaker for their organization, they can get to you through your website for that, or do they need to contact a PR person or an agent or someone like that?
You can go through my website at RichardsonConsulting.net, or you can hit me up through email. That's Gary, G-A-R-Y, dot R consulting. So R consulting is one word, and that's at gmail.com.
Okay.
So you have two ways of catching me. Please send me an email through there. Go to YouTube, check me out. In fact, if you want me to speak, go to YouTube, check me out first, and then hit me up. That way, proof is in the pudding.
Right. Very good, very good, very good. Thank you, Gary, so much for joining me on Somewhere in the Middle with Michelle Berard.
Yes.
I'm really excited to hear your show. I am very excited to get your book. I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, maybe you make your way out to the L.A. area. We get to hear you speak out here. That'd be great.
Oh, listen, I'm planning on coming out to L.A. My sister lives out that way. Anytime you want me to hit the West Coast, I'm always good for it because I get some change. I get back 3 hours. So I'm always looking to get back something. All right. So anytime I'm on the West Coast, remember, y'all, I'm that city boy with a country boy slang. I'll come down, do your presentation that you will remember, that you can record, put it on YouTube, and we can shut this thing down and have some fun. But I look forward to having everybody on my show one more time, November 28th at 8 p.m. It's called Diversity Works, and we're going to be discussing everything diversity, from leadership to racism to discrimination to how to make this thing work. We're going to move it beyond demographics and show how we can apply it in the workplace, folks. That's what we're going to do.
That is awesome. Thank you so much, Gary, for being on the show tonight. Guys, that is our show this week. You can reach out to me, Michelle Berard, online at urbanbookeditor.com or on Facebook and Instagram as Urban Book Editor. And so, you know, just send me a note. You know, I like to hear from you guys. Send me a note. Let me know if you have any topics you'd like us to cover on the show, any particular guests that you'd like us to invite. Let me know. Again, I want to give a big, big, big shout-out to Beverly Black, Tribe Family Channel, and all the members of Tribe Family Channel, now including Diversity Works, yay,
Gary
Richardson. It is a pleasure, and it is an honor to be a part of it. So you guys be good, stay mindful, remain prayerful. I will see you again on Tribe Family Channel on Friday, November 17th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Pacific, and you can look for me on the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show on November 13th at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Peace and blessings, y'all. Thank you so much. Y'all have a fabulous, fabulous weekend.